get underway. I haven't gotten a text back. If she arrives, then we'll have a full group, but we do have a quorum. I'm going to call to order the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency board meeting of September 11th, 2024. Just for public comment information, public comment will be accepted in person at the meeting, or it may be submitted by email to vinagsapublic.comments@chicoca.gov. If you would like to address the board at this meeting, you are requested to complete a speaker card and hand it to the board clerk prior to the conclusion of the staff presentation for that item. We will now go over to roll call with Linda Herman.
Thank you, Chair. Board Member Kimishu?
Here.
Board Member Doyle?
Here.
Vice Chair Rohr?
Here.
And Chair Tusinski?
Here. And as of now, Director Reynolds is absent. We will move on to the item 1.3, the August 7th, 2024 special closed session meeting announcement. We made the announcement after the closed session, but we're repeating it now just to ensure that it is on record. All board members were present. We had no action taken. Direction was given to staff. And that was the extent of the closed session report. Item 2 is the consent agenda. We have item 2.1, approval of the June 26th board meeting minutes. 2.2 is approval of financial status report. 2.3 is consideration of appointment of the Vina GSA program manager as Vina GSA administrator and groundwater sustainability plan manager. Are there any disqualifications or any no votes or anything on this? Nope. Are there any public comments on the consent agenda?
No.
Move to approve.
Great. Second.
Great. We have a motion from Vice Chair Royer and a second from Director Kimmelshue.
Okay. Thank you. Board Member Kimmelshue?
Aye.
Board Member Doyle?
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer?
Aye.
And Chair Tusinski?
Aye. So that passes unanimously. No items were removed from the consent agenda. Public comments. Members of the public may address the board at this time on any matter not already listed on the agenda. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. The board cannot take any action at this meeting on requests made under this section of the agenda. I see Mr. Brobeck walking, but I don't know if that's to public comment. Nope. Do we have any public comments listed?
I do not.
Okay. Then we will move on to the regular agenda. Item 5.1, presentation on sustainable groundwater management grant projects progress.
Great. Thank you, Chair Tuchinski, members of the board. Today we will have a series of three speakers that will be presenting on the sustainable groundwater management grant projects. And our first speaker will be Becky Fairbanks, the project coordinator on behalf of the Vina GSA, and she'll present, and then we'll shift over to Christina Buck, who will be talking about the Butte County projects that the county is implementing with the Sigma grant funds, and then Toby Giesen-Tanner, who is one of the grant project managers for one of the projects. So with that, I will hand it off to Becky, and I have to share my screen.
Thank you, Carrie.
Hello, Becky.
How's good to be here again, everybody. So you may recall that previously we brought to everyone's attention, like as we were doing the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Plan, or GSP, there were some projects and management actions that were needing to be addressed. We looked at different funding pursuits. Do you want to go to slide two? Thank you. We looked at different funding pursuits, and GWR had some grant funds available through their Sustainable Groundwater Management Grant Program. The Vina GSA applied for and was approved, $5.5 million for their proposed projects. The Vina GSA board also approved the approach to partner with Butte County Water and Resource Conservation, as well as Agricultural Groundwater Users of Butte County, or AGUBC, to lead portions of the grant-funded work. So the projects that we will be implementing in this program, this all goes through March 2026, is going to be the data gap identification and data improvement. There's a Lindo Channel recharge feasibility. There's an outreach program, project management and grant administration, water supply and recharge feasibility, interbasin coordination analysis and modeling, and then demand reduction strategies. So data gap identification and data improvement. Why it matters. We need accurate data. Accurate data is essential for making informed decisions about water resources. Through this project, we plan to invest in new monitoring sites and equipment so that we can get more precise data on surface and groundwater conditions. In the plan, we will also be able to better understand the system, and then we can amend the VINA GSA GSP over time and respond to using the new data that we collect, but also respond to the feedback that we received from DWR. So the updates on this project, everything is going to go from April 1st is when everybody started through August 31st of this year. This project is on track and within budget. Our consultants on this project is Larry Walker Associates. And so some of their progress includes that they began identifying areas within the sub-basin for potential new monitoring network sites. They've coordinated with Butte County to understand the existing network. They've developed an approach to classify shallow and deep monitoring wells to support monitoring network enhancements. And then this analysis is ongoing. They're also in the process of reviewing the GSP and DWR determination letter to identify data gaps and areas of refinement. Can go to the next slide. Thank you. So the next steps for this project. So the first we have is October 1st and 2nd will be our first outreach efforts. There's going to be tabling events. One will be in Durham. That's on October 1st. And on October 2nd, we'll be set up in Chico. And we're just going to be trying to reach, engage, and connect with domestic well users. We're also going to be finalizing our map of proposed locations for new monitoring sites. We'll be taking this to the Stakeholder Advisory Committee on October 23rd for their review and input. And then we'll take their recommendations to the board to hear for you guys' input and approval. Okay, so the Lindo Channel Recharge Feasibility. This assesses the feasibility of enhancing natural recharge along the Lindo Channel. So the key outcomes for this project will be developing the recharge feasibility study. And the study includes developing the flow thresholds, computing expected recharge yield for wet, average, and dry years. It's also going to evaluate possible infrastructure needs. And the study will also assess operational requirements and environmental and permitting needs. Other outcomes are going to be installing a monitoring network and then engaging with stakeholders. So this project is within budget. The schedule has slightly been delayed, but overall is on track. Our consultants for this project is GeoSyntech and West Yost. And their progress through August 31st includes they reviewed the water rights to assist in developing the flow thresholds for diversion. They've examined different models for environmental, hydrology, and natural flows. Now, the purpose of this modeling is to estimate the discharge that sends water down the Lindo Channel in the current conditions, so not looking to change the physical conditions. Consultants have also reviewed AEM data and geological well logs for assessing groundwater recharge potential. On August 5th, one of our consultants came up to actually physically walk the channel and just get some data collected. So next up for this project is revising the project schedule. We will bring that to you all when we have it updated, and it should be pretty soon. And then we plan to have our first stakeholder meeting. And when we have the date and location determined, we'll be sending out emails to everybody on our contact list and also post that on the BINET GSA website. Okay, so outreach program. The main purpose of the outreach program is to create education and outreach materials that support and encourage public engagement for their projects. Outreach efforts will also assist the GSA in like communicating with everybody, like communicating the sub-basin conditions or GSP development and implementation. Our consultant on this project is Raftellis, and this project is also on schedule and within budget. Raftellis, so far, they've created a style guide. And what we mean by this is we want to have consistency in our outreach materials. So they're helping us like just determine like the same simple colors to use, different fonts. They vectorize our logo, making it like scalable and clear. So we can, it's the same logo, but it just looks a little cleaner now. Raftellis has also met with our consultants for each of the projects so that they can determine the different outreach and education opportunities, but also to determine what kind of materials would be helpful for us to engage with the public. Their upcoming tasks include finalizing the project-specific outreach plans, and then developing those materials. Okay, so project management and grant administration. The tasks for the overall grant includes invoicing, quarterly reporting, closeout reporting, and environmental information form. This is also on track and within budget. And what we've done so far is on April 30th, we hosted a big team kickoff with all the consultants. We also have regular check-in meetings with the consultants on their progress on their projects. We process monthly invoices as we receive them from the consultants. We've submitted all the required contracts that are in place with the associated grant dollars. We've filed all the environmental information forms for each project. We've also prepared and submitted two quarterly invoices and progress reports to DWR. So are there any questions up to this point?
Any questions from?
I had a question on the data gap identification and data improvement. Does it include the drilling of new wells?
Yes.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah, please go on, and then we'll open for public comments and questions after the three-pronged approach.
Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Christina Buck. Thank
Great,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. Christina Buck, Assistant Director with Butte County Department of Water and Resource Conservation. I'm going to give you an update on the two projects that Butte County is leading on behalf of the GSA. So next slide, please. I'll just dive right into the water supply and recharge feasibility project. Just to remind you, this project has kind of two main pieces. One is to identify two most promising surface water supply projects and to complete feasibility analysis for those. And then the second piece is to look at opportunities for recharge in the subbasin, different approaches, and identify pilot projects and hopefully conduct recharge either this winter or next winter, and then write up lessons learned from those efforts. So that's the overview. This project is contracted between the county and GeoSyntec, and they've also subcontracted to Water and Land Solutions. And so it's on time and on budget so far. They've been really working to gather relevant information and data, begun to look at the AEM, which is the helicopter, you know, that flew and collected subsurface data, looking at that and developing a 3D model to help assess potential recharge areas, utilizing that new information and coupling it with some of the previous work. This map here shows a map out of a previous 2018 study that used a number of data layers from mapping. So really pulling together both past and more recent information to help us understand kind of our best understanding of recharge areas and potential. We met and had a discussion with the Butte County Water Commission in August on particularly on the water supply side, and have met with Public Works to begin to understand what kind of information they have related to flood flows and how that might benefit recharge efforts. And then we had a stakeholder meeting at the end of July as well with environmental stakeholders. So just beginning some of those conversations with different stakeholder groups for this project. So our next steps here is the consultants will continue to gather information and really begin to explore in more detail some of these water supply and recharge concepts that are identified mostly in the recharge action plan. A lot of the pieces that this project is looking to move forward are implementation steps that have been identified and kind of outlined in that recharge action plan that was adopted by the Board of Supervisors back in February of this year. So the consultants will further refine their near-term recharge pilot projects and pull those together as that comes into more more really meat on the bones of what that looks like. We'll be able to share that out more with the Water Commission and other groups. And then I want to mention that, as we all know, the Park Fire occurred. And in response to that, the Resource Conservation District, Butte County Resource RCD, in partnership with the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve and others, is really working to do erosion control and other kind of natural nature-based solutions to address erosion control and other things. And so we're going to partner and use some of this grant funding through them for the implementation of leaky rock weirs along the Big Chico Creek watershed. That could have a multi-benefit erosion control, but also as you back up the water and slow it down, giving it opportunity to soak in and wanting to understand the potential for that in this kind of lower foothill zone. So it's a great opportunity to really build on the efforts that they're pursuing and to investigate that kind of from the recharge side. So those are the next steps for that project. The second project I'll talk about is the Interbasin Coordination Analysis and Modeling Project. Again, just a reminder what this entails. Really, we want to better understand the system at the boundaries. And so this project is looking at the rivers and streams, particularly the Sacramento River, right, which is a boundary between the west side and the east side of the valley and those subbasins, water budgets across that boundary, monitoring wells, even projects to the degree that they're kind of relevant for us to be aware of what neighbors are doing. And then this project is also refining the Butte Basin groundwater model. And so all of this work is basically the data and some information that will support coordination efforts going forward between GSAs. Next slide. So what's been happening so far? The consultant on this project is Montgomery and Associates, and they've been gathering relevant data, model files, and reports for review. They've begun to compile contents from the groundwater sustainability plans along the northern Sacramento River corridor. This project is actually jointly funded by the Vina GSA grant and the Wyandotte Creek GSA grant, so they're also working along the Feather River corridor and those subbasins, kind of in parallel. And we've been talking a lot about the possible model refinements that may need to be made to the Butte Basin groundwater model, both to support interbasin coordination, but then also just broader things that the model could be continued to be used for water budgets and other things to support planning in these subbasins. So the next steps for this project is they will continue to pull information together from the GSPs. It's important to note that, you know, Vina and Butte, of course, have approved groundwater sustainability plans. Corning and Colusa's were not approved. They were incomplete, and they had this 6-month time period to address concerns and resubmit to DWR, which they did, I believe, in July or April. I forget which timeline they were on of this year. So they're now in this holding pattern, waiting again for DWR to issue a determination of their plan, which DWR has indicated will happen by the end of the year. So we are, this project is using, you know, kind of the revised submitted GSPs. And so information gathering from staff that can provide some of that updated sustainable management criteria and other things that change kind of between the originally adopted GSP and this resubmitted GSP. And then in the near term, I think we'll be really determining which model refinements will be completed by this effort, by this project for the Butte Basin groundwater model. So I want to also add on the interbasin coordination piece, the project, as I mentioned, is really about data analysis and providing information. Then there, of course, is a need for actual coordination between GSAs across these boundaries. So in parallel with this project, the county, Butte County, as you know, is a GSA in the Butte Subbasin. You can see Butte Subbasin is really well situated in the center of the valley and connected to many subbasins. And so the Board of Supervisors approved direction for staff to apply for Facilitation Support Services, which is a program that the Department of Water Resources provides. And we've been utilizing from day one of before Vina GSA was formed to help us get through all the requirements of SGMA. And so Butte County will apply for that specifically for interbasin coordination. Tanya Carlone has been doing that role during GSP development and since in the Butte subbasin, she's continued to provide facilitation to those GSAs. And so what we want to do is to continue to have that specifically for interbasin coordination and really outline and work amongst these subbasins to outline what activities interbasin coordination will involve, at what level, staff level, board level, you know, who's involved with what, and really outline that in some sort of work plan. So that's a parallel effort. And the first step is going to be for us to apply for that FSS to support that. So with that, any questions?
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think interbasin coordination is one of the most important things that we're going to be doing and studying. I noticed that you had said that some of the funds were going to be used to refine the Vina groundwater model. So explain a little bit more about refining the groundwater model. And the reason I say that is I would love to know exactly where the water is, where the water goes, if in fact that they do, if it does flow from our sub-basin to another sub-basin or vice versa. And I would hope that the Colusa sub-basin and the Corning sub-basin are doing similar projects so we can get a good idea of where the water really goes.
Yeah.
And if it does flow between the two, then coordination is imperative.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And that is a big motivator for that project. So, can you go back once or maybe two slides to where that map is? Yeah. So the Butte Basin groundwater model is great because it covers Butte County sub-basins, but it's limited in that it stops at the boundary of the Sacramento River, essentially, which is also the boundary of these sub-basins. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we're talking about with that modeling team is how do we handle that limitation? What do we need to do with that model boundary so that it gives us the information that we need, or how do we tie it in with other more regional tools that our neighbors used? And so one of the things that this project is doing is looking both at one, addressing that limitation. How are we going to do that with our own modeling tool, the Butte Basin groundwater model that's been used for water budgets, but then also looking at the results of the modeling tools that our neighbors used. So the Corning sub, and everybody used a different model.
I know. I figured that. Yeah.
In the first go around of GSPs, largely because every 2 months a new model came out kind of as we were going along. So that's part of the challenge of this, but is to understand what are those modeling tools saying, the differences, and why, and then what do we think our best guess is. And I think part of the discussion, so this technical effort will tackle some of those technical questions. I think the bigger kind of interbasin coordination question maybe that the GSA should grapple with is how much do we use models? How much do we use monitoring wells and or a combination of the two going forward to really help us understand dynamics?
No, I think that's actually very exciting. I can't wait to see what comes out of this. I mean, it may take many years to get a model that we're confident in. I do agree with Mr. Brobeck, who's tried to beat this into our head over the last several years, that I think they are connected. And what happens in one will affect the other. Yeah. And I think once we have the data, whether it's through monitoring wells, through modeling, whatever, then we can go to our neighbors and say, hey, you know, you're pumping too much, or we're pumping too much and we're affecting you. So it's exciting. I hope we can. I've always said this is the hardest thing to model because you can't see it, right? We can't see groundwater. Yeah. We can try to measure it the best we can, but hopefully with science, with the helicopters and, you know, do you still think that helicopter modeling is somewhat accurate?
I think we'll learn new things from
it. Never mind. Fair enough. Thank you.
Christina, before you go, I just had a question too. It kind of dovetails off what Director Kimmelshue was talking about. We had data gaps that we acknowledged when we did our report, and we did assumptions in our plan. Between these two projects that you're talking about, how much more are we going to improve in our knowledge of our status quo, for example, with the recharge from streams, how many of our streams are gaining streams, losing streams, those kind of details that we didn't quite have? Are we going to be closer? And if so, how much closer to having better knowledge of those things?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think we'll probably have a more clarity around how much closer as this project can, it's actually the project that Becky described, that first data gaps one, as that unfolds over the next year. I think we will have new data points that go in less than a year with new wells and new stream gauges, but it's going to take time to collect data at those data points. So we are going to have this kind of phase of in between where we have new potential, but not the data yet. And so it will take some time to get closer, but that project is certainly going to move us forward in a really productive way.
So you're expecting that by the time we have our 5-year update that's required, we'll have a better handle on some of these data gaps, or will we still be needing to collect data and we won't really have a good idea until the next go around? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, through this process.
A little bit of both. Okay. A little bit of both. Yeah. We will have a better handle, but I think we mostly in this 5-year, 2027 5-year, will describe how we've improved our monitoring. And then it'll probably be the next 5-year that we can actually really begin to hone in some of those other gaps.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
So I'm going to turn it over to Toby to talk about the demand reduction.
Great. Part three.
Hello, I'm Toby Giesentanner. I'm here wearing my agricultural groundwater users of Butte County hat today. All right, so in addition to the water, surface water, recharge, the data gap, all of these things that are happening, we're also looking at demand reduction strategies. And just a quick recap, I mean, the whole point here is to improve sub-basin sustainability by decreasing consumptive use. We're going to do that through two different strategies. One is a precision irrigation program strategy. The second is an extend orchard replacement program strategy. Let's go to the next one. So there's some fun maps on this slide, and there's some data. But the long and the short of it is there's two steps. We're going to perform essentially a comprehensive state of irrigation technology and systems analysis in the subbase. How's that? That's awesome. So that's a nice way of saying Land IQ, who is our subcontractor on this, who has a tremendous amount of experience collecting data, creating spatial maps at the state level and in regionally in different areas of the state. They have the ability to create a field by field spatial map that gives us information on every field from evapotranspiration, so ET, crop type, crop age, precipitation. So those are the base layers that they can give us today. And then we're layering on top of that irrigation method. So we'll know on every field who's using what type of irrigation method, whether it's drip, solid set, flood irrigation, we'll know on every field. In addition to that, we'll be able to layer on soil type, elevation, and ownership. So with all of that information, we're going to develop a precision irrigation program for the subbasin. And then we're going to go out into the public and talk to the farmers about it. We're going to get a bunch of feedback. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to put some stations in different almonds and walnut. Those are our two primary crops. So we're going to put some stations out, and that's going to cost a little bit of money, but that's going to help us really refine the spatial map. The long story short is over 2025, we're going to go out, talk to the farmers, and through an education and essentially outreach program, we're going to help educate folks because we're going to know what's happening on a field by field basis. So we're going to be able to say, those fields are using a lot of water. Those fields are a lot more efficient, and we're going to have strategies to go out and talk to folks. So that's precision irrigation. Now let's go to the next slide. The second program is an extend orchard replacement program. So naturally what happens is when an orchard's ready to be taken out, a farmer may or may not, but in some cases leaves it out for a growing season. The idea here, and if you look at this map, you'll see that it's changing. And so you can see the different colors represent different crop types. And the idea here is to incentivize the grower to extend the duration of their fallowing season by at least an additional year. So it's out 1 year, at least an additional year, and maybe more. There's another strategy here that we may layer on depending on the economics, but there may be other things that we ask farmers or incentivize other behaviors incentivized on top of that, depending on where that land is. If it's next to, let's say, streams, or there's other multi-benefit opportunities and the landowner's interested, there may be ways to layer on additional values that make sense for us and make sense for the farmer. The goal on this is to temporarily fallow between 1600 and 3200 acres per year. So it kind of goes back in, like, into the baseload. How are we reducing consumptive use? We got this program running every year, right? And that'll reduce groundwater use by about 4,000 to 8,000 acre feet per year in the subbasin. Okay. So in terms of what's happening, I think, you know, we just kind of got funded. And so we're on time, we're on budget, right? And you've heard that tonight. We're working with GeoSyntec and LandIQ. Again, we couldn't be more pleased. We've got a great consulting team on this. There's essentially three phases to these components. There's the precision irrigation and extend orchard. So they're developing these pilots, and you can see the activity there. There's implementing the pilots, and then there's finalizing, taking that input and finalizing the program technical memos that come out of this that can then be implemented over time in the sub-basin by the GSA, Tuscan Water District, and other entities that are still here. Okay, so that's that. Questions?
Questions?
I've got one question. You had mentioned, Toby, that under the extended orchard replacement program that we could possibly reduce consumption by 4,000 acre feet per year. Is that what you said?
Yes.
And so in CAMI, our goal is 10,000? Or do we have a goal? 20. Is it 20,000? Okay.
Our GSP identifies the target is 10,000 acres. Say? But it says 10,000. Okay. But the is it okay for me to keep talking about this? the maps, the maps show somewhere between 2,000 and 30,000 acre feet of deficit, depending on the year type and depending on how long out you go. So I think our feeling is that our plan says 10,000 acre feet. That's like the pin the tail on the donkey mm-hmm. type thing. But the reality is probably we're closer to the 20,000 acre foot okay. deficit annually.
But still, this could be a good dent.
A big chunk
in it, and that's following what 1,800 to 1,600 to 3,200.
That's right. That's right.
100 acres. Okay.
In 100,000 acres, yeah, about 80,000, 60,000.
Not really very much.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Kind of what we're thinking.
You Great. Throw a bee friendly cover crop over the top of it. Now you're.
Yeah. I mean, you could grow a non irrigated
yep.
cover crop if you
that's
wanted
right.
to. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
That feeds into what my question was going to be about grant funding opportunities. For this, we kind of quickly had an interview with a state agency about a grant, and we didn't get it, which is fine. That happens. But I'm wondering if these types of multi-benefit uses are things that you've identified as a way that we potentially could get additional grant funding or qualify at least for the running for additional grants based on some of these multi-benefit uses you alluded to.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we could go on and on, and we really enjoy talking about that and working. And I think you've got a landowner base out there that's open. Not everybody is open to all this stuff, but we have so many streams coming through the sub basin and so many opportunities and a whole 100,000 acres of different types of landowners. So there's going to be lots of opportunity to find multi benefit opportunities. So
great. All
right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Good. So, Cammie, unless you have something else you want to say to wrap this up with a bow, I'll open it up to public comments and questions from the public. Did we get any comment cards?
Yes, we did. One with Jim Brobeck.
Okay, please, Mr. Brobeck.
I'm just going to keep the slideshow open in case we need to refer back.
Great. Thank you so much.
I've got some comments on the project schedule for the Lindo project. I've been looking at the grant proposal and looking at the schedule, and it is certainly behind in implementation. For instance, the project feasibility report was due in July. The stakeholder meetings due to start in March and conclude in June. And then it mentioned that there was going to be a kickoff meeting and field visit with staff and stakeholders scheduled for March 25th. And since that didn't happen, I organized a meeting with stakeholders and some members of staff showed up. And stakeholders showed up. I was there. Interested parties showed up at the flood control infrastructure for Chico, which we assume is where the diversions are going to take place for the Lindo project. That is the headwater of the Lindo Channel. And the report today indicated that there was a site visit on August 5th. And I'm concerned that the public, the stakeholders, were not informed of this site visit. Secondly, I'm wondering if the consultant has prepared any documentation for outreach to stakeholders and interested parties. The grant requires 3 interviews with key stakeholders. I wonder who are the key stakeholders? It's not mentioned in the grant. And I'm wondering if these meetings have occurred and if the summaries of the interviews have been provided to the GSA as required in the grant. Thirdly, the final design report is due on September 16th, 5 days from now. I'm wondering if the final design or any clue of what the design is will be released during that time period. I've been waiting for a long time to see what this project entails. I can't understand what's going to change in the existing flood control regime here in Chico associated with this. And when I talk to people on staff, they don't seem to have any information. They just say the consultants are working on it. So my frustration at the lack of information on what this project would entail remains intact. On the interbasin coordination, years ago, communication with staff indicated that interbasin coordination would strive to rely on a yet to be agreed upon single Sacramento River Corridor groundwater flow model. And today, from the report that I heard, we're going to continue to use 3 different models and then attempt to resolve whatever inconsistencies these models have. So Director Kimmelshue, I thank you for bringing this up. I think this is a key factor that should have been resolved during the formation of this, during the basin setting, to have a clear understanding of how our regional groundwater flows. And we're still in the dark on that. So that's very concerning to me. If I could get any answers to these questions tonight, I'd appreciate it. If not, maybe I can communicate with staff by email at some later time. Thanks for taking my comments.
Fantastic. Thank you. Cami, Becky, do you have any answers about when this, if I'm consolidating Mr. Brobeck's comments, the time frame is changing because we are off schedule. Do we have an idea of when we might be, for lack of a better word, resetting some of these dates, what the horizon might be? Specific to Lindo Channel. Thank you just for that.
Just knowing a little more history than Becky does on this with schedule. So Mr. Brobeck mentioned dates that were out of our application. So process-wise, right, we applied for these projects in December of 2022. We didn't hear back until May and of this year, 2023. We didn't get a grant agreement signed until April of 2024. So clearly the schedule that we set out for ourselves in the application has been blown out. So our playbook at this point, I think it's good for both all of us to be on the same page that the playbook is the grant agreements at this point. There's some helpful background in the grant application for sure on these projects, but the guide that we are all playing to, deliverables and funding budgets, et cetera, is our grant agreement that VINA GSA has with the Department of Water Resources. So that's one piece. And the consultants then have been getting on board since they were contracted with you or by the county in the spring of this year. So it's been kind of a slow boil to get everybody up to speed, lots of different teams. And then I'll let Becky kind of address then the current schedule of the Lindo Channel project and what we anticipate there.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, we will be revising our project schedule. We have a check-in meeting scheduled next week, and we should have it within 2 weeks, a new project schedule that we will let everybody know. We will post on our website also. As far as the stakeholder meetings, we have not had one yet. I mentioned earlier, we plan to have one soon. We are just trying to finalize a date and also a location to have it. And we will email everybody on our contact list. We will also post it on the website.
Great. So I think that covers the general thing that he did. And the
engineer coming up and wandering the creek bed, he's going to come back and do a more formal site visit, right? Okay. So he's just up here getting a look-see. Got it.
Okay. Perfect. Good. Thank you. Great. And then just real quickly, sorry about the interbasin model. Is that one of the things that might be determined through the actual sitting down interbasin coordination as opposed to the data integration part of it?
I think that's right. And I think really as that parallel effort gets underway, it would be helpful for the VINA GSA board to clearly communicate, and staff will support this, kind of what the objectives of the VINA GSA are as it relates to interbasin coordination, and then being able to communicate that around to other GSA boards. I think that's the challenge, right? Is how do agencies communicate with each other? So that will be, I think, a nuts and bolts of that effort to figure out some of those lines of communication and then what those pieces are, including modeling.
Maybe this is off topic, but Mr. Brobeck talked about a Sacramento River corridor model. Is that something that was ever, that we talked about? Is that something that's ever a possibility, or are we going to rely on the different sub basins putting together their own models?
Yeah. This idea of a single model that we might all use. I mean, I foresaw the, you know, the complication of having multiple models. And in 2017, you may remember that the county and others had a conversation with a lot of technical folks, the modelers, as well as some of the managers, to try to understand, like, of the models that are out there, does one of them rise to the top? And could it be recommended by this kind of modeling work group as a good tool for Sac Valley to use? And out of that report came a lot of good recommendations, but not that clear of a recommendation on a single tool that was clearly kind of the best pick. So as a result of that, and as you can imagine, both political and technical complexities, because there are so many agencies involved, the result was kind of different sub-basins chose different tools at different times because the timing of even basin setting work was just offset. We weren't all doing the same thing at the same time. So here we are. I have some hopes that, you know, we have this interbasin coordination analysis project. It will give us good information, and then we need to figure out how agencies are actually going to coordinate, and whether, you know, there is a willingness and a desire amongst those agencies to coordinate in a way that they choose a single tool.
Is and I'm sorry to belabor the point, but is there some kind of hammer if for some reason the different sub basins do not want to cooperate with each other? I mean, there is none. There's no hammer at this point in time. The state of California can't come in and say, you guys will cooperate with each other.
So I think the burden is on DWR actually to ensure that one sub basin is not affecting another sub basin's ability to achieve their sustainability goals.
Yeah, that's my concern. Yeah. If in fact they are related. We don't know that for sure. But
I mean, they're definitely one of the reasons that they're called sub basins is that they are sub basins of the bigger groundwater basin, right? So there's certainly there's connection. The nature of that connection and the timing and how much it changes from year to year, all of that is what we hope to get some more clarity on, I think, with this project.
Okay. Well, you'll hear more from me about that into the future.
If memory serves, from conversations on the technical advisory committee back in 2017-18, we're actually one of the culprits on not having a unified model because ours is more sophisticated than everybody else's. And we made a conscious decision. We did not want to proactively dumb down our model to conform with the rest of them, but the ability of the other basins to catch up with us is pretty doubtful. So we just need to know that having a conforming single model for the Sacramento River Basin may cause us to lose data points that we have kind of been held up as being one of the forerunners on in terms of sophistication is my recollection from those meetings, but I'm 7 years out of date.
It's a good point. No, that's right. I mean, the Butte Basin groundwater model is a daily model. It has more streams in it than the regional model. So exactly. It's a more refined tool. So I think one of our challenges in Butte County is if we continue to value that tool because of those reasons, the question becomes, how do we integrate with a regional model? How do we refine the Butte? And this is partly what this project is kind of struggling with, is how do we either change the Butte Basin groundwater model to make that less of a limitation within that model? Or how do we make them talk to each other better? Or, you know, how do we bridge that gap? Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Are there any other comments?
Yes, there's one more.
Great.
Greg Brislin.
Oh, great.
Sorry if I mispronounced your name.
Good afternoon. I'm Greg Brislin, private citizen. I didn't anticipate speaking to you, but as I look at the minutes, you're anticipating adjourning tonight to November 13. And I would urge you to have monthly meetings. We know where we are in this water district right now. However, tonight, as we're meeting, there's a 10-year anniversary party for the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. The invitation said, wear party hats. And the gist of the party is networking. And we're here anticipating meeting again in 2 months. And we have 550,000 acre feet deficit. I'm a layperson, and I've just dove into this stuff starting in April. But what I'm seeing is a sanguine approach to a huge catastrophe. If you're going down 20,000 acre feet a year and you're hoping to save 20,000, you're at status quo, you're still at 550,000. What is there to celebrate about this situation? I urge you to have monthly meetings. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And anybody else? That? Okay, great. Then we will move to our next item, which is 5.2, Introduction to the Butte County Drought Resilience Plan. And this is going to be presented by Kimmy, I believe, unless, oh, no.
We're going to switch. So,
Okay.
All right. Thank you. So, I'm going to come up here because that way Becky can sit in that seat. So, thank you, Chair Tuchinsky. I'm not used to being up at this podium. Cami Loser, Director of Water and Resource Conservation. And today I'm going to give you a presentation and an overview on SB 552, which is the Water Shortage Planning and Small Water Systems and for rural communities legislation that was passed way back in September of 2021. And the purpose of this presentation is to provide an update of county activities as they relate to drought and domestic wells within the county as a whole, but it does indirectly involve the GSAs. So SB 552, again, was passed in September of 2021, and it came out of recommendations from some drought work that was done during the 2012-2016 drought and AB 1668. And so all of those recommendations that came from different task force at the state level were passed in SB 552. And 552 is really about a water shortage contingency planning process, and it focuses on small water systems and rural communities, particularly when we say rural communities, we're talking about domestic wells. And so it focuses on risk assessment and to determine vulnerability, and it develops some recommendations on how we can address small water systems and domestic wells. Next slide, please. SB 552, what it did is created some requirements for small water suppliers, and there's different sizes and they don't really apply to what we're doing. The counties have some requirements, and then there's some requirements of the states. Next slide, please. Yes. So the county, two things that the county had to do upon passage, or at least initiate upon passage of 552, which was create a water shortage task force or drought task force that focuses on small water systems and domestic wells or some similar alternative, and then also develop a county drought resilience plan that focuses on state smalls and domestic wells. The county already had a drought task force, so we complied right off the bat, and then we already had a drought preparedness and mitigation plan. And so we will be updating that plan to take into consideration state small water systems and domestic wells in the county. Next slide, please. So to let you know about what we're doing with the drought resilience plan. So the County Board of Supervisors authorized staff, the Department of Water and Resource Conservation, to apply for drought technical assistance for the preparation of a drought resilience plan. And so we have an agreement with through DWR and their consultant team, which is StanTech, to prepare the drought resilience plan. And we're kicking that process off. And some of the initial activities that we'll be doing is adapting the existing drought task force to meet the requirements of SB 552. We already meet the requirements by having the drought task force, but then identifying and some of the, I'll go into it in the next slide, I think, but the roles and responsibilities of the members of the drought task force. And then we're having a kickoff meeting with the drought task force so that they know what they'll be working on over the next year. The other component of, and I think it's one of the important ones within the drought plan, is a risk vulnerability assessment. And that determines the risk of dry wells that may occur or dry systems, small community systems, as a result of drought. Next slide, please. Actually go back to the previous slide. So one of those things, as in the drought impact analysis study that the county prepared a few years ago, we did have a risk vulnerability assessment of dry wells that would occur as a result or could occur as a result of drought. So we're kind of looking to the future as to the impacts of drought on dry wells. And keep in mind that this is a separate kind of thing, dry wells, dry domestic wells associated with drought activities or droughts and climate change, and versus sustainable groundwater management or groundwater management. So keeping those things kind of separate. But it does, one of the things in the drought or in SB 552 was identifying other potential stakeholders that might want to be involved in the process, and it suggested that GSAs might want to be a part of that. So that's part of the reason why I'm here. Next slide, please. So again, we have our existing drought plan. It was adopted back in 2004, and it did establish a drought task force there. I think there's like 12 members. It's an even number. You'll see a striked out, one line that's stricken there, and that's because that the Butte Basin Water Users Association is no longer in existence. So we will be, this essentially will continue to be the drought task force. We'll likely add the director of development services to the list just based on some of the historic planning activities and drought planning activities that the county has been conducting over the last few years, especially during the most recent drought. Next slide, please. So what we're doing is we're taking our existing plan and we're essentially updating it with a drought resilience plan in compliance with SB 552. And then so it'll be a whole new plan. The various chapters will be talking about the drought task force. We'll have a water drought and water shortage risk assessment based on a whole bunch of data that DWR has and anything else that we can add to it. And then short-term response actions and long-term mitigation strategies and actions, and then other implementation considerations. And that will be what comprises the drought plan. Good. Thank you. So again, what is required of the plan by SB 552 is the water shortage risk or the vulnerability assessment, and then kind of short and long-term mitigation for state smalls and domestic wells. So some of the things that we'll be looking at or considering, and these are suggestions in SB 552, is water consolidation projects, so connecting with existing water systems. These are also some things that might be things that we would want to consider for domestic wells, even as part of groundwater management, right? So where there's connection or crossover, that's, we want to be consistent. And that is part of, as we think long-term and even domestic well mitigation into the future. So just making sure that we don't have inconsistent programs. So having some mitigation programs, provision of emergency and interim drinking water solutions, and then this potential funding sources for that. Next slide, please. So really, again, working with the GSAs, I think there's a great opportunity to share data and fill data gaps. As you know, the GSA is preparing as part of the GSP Sigma projects, the update projects, is a well inventory data. And so as that information becomes available, the county can use that information as well as any additional information that the county may have, just because we're doing this countywide, but I think we can share information and data. The drought risk assessment for domestic wells, we have similar vulnerability indicators. The department already provides, you know, as part of our annual groundwater status report update to the Board of Supervisors, as well as the annual reports prepared for the GSPs, has all of the similar information about precipitation, dry years, water quality, the status of the groundwater basin, groundwater levels, and the presence of obviously irrigation or irrigated agriculture, and just depth of domestic wells. Those are vulnerability indicators as part of 552, but it's also what we study as part of the GSPs. So again, we want to have consistent mitigation, and then as well as opportunities for consolidation with water providers. Here in Butte County, really, there's limited providers, but or in the Vina sub-basin, but there are other water providers, obviously, in the other sub-basins. So that's how we envision working with the GSAs, perhaps as part of when the county gives their updates to the Board of Supervisors, providing similar updates here to the Vina GSA board as well. Just so you know, next slide, please. Oh, thank you. Our schedule is pretty much over the next year that we'll be going through this process. We do anticipate having a draft version in March or in the spring. I know that's that. Now I look at it, I'm like, wow, that's just right around the corner. But hopefully, as we kick off in the next week at their first the drought task force meeting this year, and then we'll just be continuing to provide chapters and updates to the drought task force. So we'll keep you up to date on those activities. If you know, obviously, if any of you want to participate in that process, you're more than welcome to do that. And I think that's it. Questions?
Any questions?
No more droughts, please.
Yes. Thank you.
So I guess that counts as a request as opposed to a question. But are there any public comments on this item, Linda?
No.
Okay. Then we will move on to item six, communications and reports. And I know there is a public comment for this, but I'll wait. And I think probably it's best to wait till the end just to see what's announced and see if that answers anything that person may have.
Yeah, because I think the only verbal would be the program manager report. Are you going to do that for her? Or
I don't have
that. So I think it's just information for now.
Oh, it's just information for now. Okay, great. Yeah. Then we'll take the public comment on this and then see if that prompts any questions and discussion.
Yes, it's Ann Dawson.
Great. Dr. Dawson, please join us.
I just wanted to make a comment on the Public Health Department's well permitting summary. I think the usefulness of that report would be improved if we had the depth of new domestic wells. I don't have an opinion about ag wells, but I think it would be useful to add that into the report and perhaps have it assigned to the date that the well was dug rather than the date it was approved or whatever, because that induces quite a bit of delay. What was it? Oh, and personally, I'd like to see it split out between the Vina Basin, and within that basin, the VOC area of concern. I think the two may be quite different, but I think it would be good information to add. That's all.
Thank you. And for those who don't know, Dr. Dawson is on our stakeholder advisory committee. So she's part of our group. Cami, are those requests that we can at least make to see if that would make our report a little more robust?
Sure. The report is actually prepared by the Division of Environmental Health. So I don't know how much influence I have over that, but I will always make provide them with any suggestions that we receive on that to see if it's possible for them to do that. One of the things is that I do know people submit their applications and they have essentially a year to drill their well, or they apply for an extension. And at that point, then it's up to the well driller to file a well completion report, and that goes to DWR with all of those details. Beyond that, I do know that the county goes out and I think inspects the seal. I might be just making up the terms now. And so there might be a date associated with that, but Dr. Dawson does have a point that once the application goes in and when they install it are two different. And so the data is based on, you know, they applied for it, whether it's been installed or not at that time.
Do we know if Department of Health informs them of what the minimum threshold is for their area, or if the well drilling companies are aware of it?
They have, no, I don't think it goes to the minimum threshold, but the well ordinance does talk about at least a minimum depth that they should consider drilling to, which is like back to 1996 levels or something like that.
Okay.
But I will say, you know, in the future, the county will be updating its well ordinance. So there's all these things that are happening kind of at the same time or will happen in the near future. So there's different things that will be taken into consideration, and some things like that might be recommendations that this board might want to make as part of that process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will be adjourning to closed session. Are there any public comments about closed session, Linda?
No.
Nope, seeing that any board disqualifications? Okay, seeing none, we will go to closed session and then return with the closed session announcement upon completion. Thank you all for your attendance tonight in the open session. Okay, we are reconvening for the closed session report. In the closed session, the board received updates on items 4.1, 4.2, 4.3. On items 4.1 and 4.2, no action was taken and no direction was given. On item 4.3, no action was taken, but direction was given to staff. And with that, we will adjourn to the Vina GSA regular board meeting on November 13th at 5:30 p.m. in these very chambers. Thank you. Yeah.